Your work life, all of our work lives. Welcome to Work with Marty Nemko.
It's kind of standard fare on a work-related show like this to do a pre-Valentine's Day show about romance in the workplace, but this year is a little different. Hashtag Me Too. Do the rules change? Official rules, unofficial rules, and simply what's wise to do in an era in which everyone from Donald Trump to Harvey Weinstein and a whole host of others have been accused of sexual misconduct. Relatively venial, as apparently is the case with Aziz Ansari, to far worse, a climate of sexual harassment, as was the case with Harvey Weinstein and John Conyers. Then there was the intermediates like Al Franken. It's very subtle. NPR's Tavis Smiley, NPR's Garrison Keillor, Charlie Rose, Russell Simmons, C.K. Lewis, Kevin Spacey, Oliver Stone, Ben Affleck, NBC's Matt Lauer, Washington Post's Ryan Lizza. It's probably next to Donald Trump, the number two topic of conversation in America today. So what's right ethically, legally? Where is discretion the better part of valor? I should, before I introduce my guest who's going to help me talk about this, Career Builder does an annual Valentine's Day survey conducted by the Harris Poll, and office romance, perhaps not surprisingly, is at a 10-year low, with 36% of workers reporting dating a coworker, down from 41% last year. But, and this shocked me, 22% of workers have dated their boss, up from 15% last year. Now, obviously caution is the watchword of the year, but and my usual obsession with balance, I might point out that no less than Barack and Michelle Obama started dating at work. Bill and Melinda Gates started dating at work, and Jim Halpert and Pam Beasley of The Office started dating at work. My wife, Barbara Nemko, and I met at work. So we have a little bit of a bias toward it, but we are also chastened by the new realities. And with us to help tease all this out is my favorite voice of uncommon sense, Dr. Barbara Nemko. Thank you for co-conspirating me, if that's a word, on the show today.
You're very welcome, but I don't think that's a word.
No, okay. Well, mistake number one, I've only been on the air now for 2 minutes and I've already made a mistake. So
outstanding.
Right. Okay. So what are your thoughts? I'd like you to take the lead. What are your thoughts about what is, not so much laws, because every workplace has a different rule. Some say absolutely no dating in the workplace. Many say no dating your boss. Others have dating contracts to kind of try to get the rules of the road down in writing and prevent lawsuits. But what does your voice of uncommon sense have to offer today to men and women, of course, in straight and gay relationships in this year as we approach Valentine's Day about romance in the workplace?
Well, sometimes when I look at the landscape, it's so overwhelming and so fraught with landmines that I think it's an insane thing to think about doing. But if you really get down to it, we date at people we meet at the workplace because we spend most of our time there because we already have so much in common.
Right.
It's not an artificial situation. We see this person in happy times, sad times, good times for the business, bad times for the business. So you get to know somebody in a much deeper way than you do if you're just going out for the first time and talking about the weather or the latest movie.
Of course, not just business. Of course, nonprofits, government as well. Right.
So I think some things are not really so hard to understand. If you ask someone out, although many people now are terrified to do that, if you just ask them out and they say no, and that's the end of it, you're not going to get in any trouble. if you come back and ask them again, you're treading on thin ice. And by the third time, you're a harasser.
Yep.
So that's pretty easy to understand.
Right, that's easy. But what about what goes on sometimes is a person has regrets afterwards and may after getting involved feel that it was coercive, or their second thoughts made them feel like they had made a mistake and they somehow can't accept that they made a mistake. So, you know, it's all well and good to say you're absolutely right. No one could argue against ask once, and if it's a no, no means no. And even when you're in a relationship, as we saw with Aziz Ansari, he was in a consensual sexual relationship with this woman and they had had oral sex and he wanted to go further. She pushed. He pushed a little harder. And he's now the subject of great scrutiny. Let's just say scrutiny in the national media. He will never be remembered as a comedian as much as somebody who pushed the limits too far.
Okay.
So in the relationship, what's your guidance about romance in the workplace after it's already in the process?
First of all, I think the wisest thing to do is not. Well, I think you absolutely should not get into a relationship with somebody you report to or somebody who reports to you, because that opens up a whole other line of litigation.
Far more dangerous, no question.
And if you are in that kind of a relationship, you have to think about who is more likely to need to leave that workplace and how important is it to you to stay. And I think that's where a lot of lawsuits happen, because probably many more women have been in relationships with their male bosses.
Mm-hmm.
And if the male boss is in a strategic role in the company, then he's more likely to stay and she's more likely to be let go. And that's where lawsuits happen. That's very uncomfortable and unhappy. So as you pointed out to our listeners, we met at the workplace. But we were both equals in the workplace. I didn't report to you. You didn't report to me. We were in the school environment. So that piece of it was not a threat. Even if you're in a consensual romantic relationship, obviously there are two partners that have to agree on exactly what it is that they want to do. And if he wanted to go further and she said no and he pushed again, okay, that's what you don't do.
So it really is like the rules on many college campuses now. Yes means yes and no means no.
Yeah.
But, you know, to complicate matters, as part of the research on the show, I looked at Jezebel, the feminist website, and they reported a study that said that 15% of women have slept with their boss.
Mm-hmm.
And when here's the punchline, 37% of them said it helps their career. So, you know, it's all well and good for a boss, male or female, to say, it's not in my interest to have a romantic relationship with my supervisee. But sometimes it makes sense, male or female, for the supervisee to want to have sex with the boss, because if at minimum they know that that's a power imbalance and that they could, if they want, exert power that could enable them to get, say, a plum assignment or a promotion, because they know that boss is at grave risk of losing his or her job. So in the real world, it isn't as black and white as don't sleep with your boss, don't sleep with your coworker. It's complicated. And it's all easy for us to be nice and rational here. I'm in a padded cell, kind of the studio, KALW, and, you know, I'm talking with my wife. And we've been married, we've been together for 45 years. But what about people who are in the throes of youth, in their sexual peaks, and it is exciting and titillating and it's new? How does one in the real world, where flirtation, whether it be overt because somebody wears a low-cut blouse or simply flips their hair or a guy who gives a certain kind of look, how does one in the real world, when one is at one's sexual peak in their 20s, in their 30s, and they're feeling this real connection, as you say, to somebody who, instead of not at a bar in an artificial situation, but they see each other day in and day out, and so little by little, there is this, by accretion, this slow, ever-growing attraction. What do you say to that person in the real world when one is the boss, let us say, and one is the supervisee.
Just say no. If you are the boss, you have to be really living dangerously.
Absolutely.
No matter how interested the supervisee is in having this relationship,
yep,
you are opening yourself to such a world.
I really agree. I really do. You know what I want to do, though? I don't think this should be a dialogue. I think this should be, we should bring in the community of the KALW listenership. So, dear KALW listeners, we invite you to call either, ideally, you know, specificity is the antidote of boredom. So if you want to tell a true story, you don't have to use your real name if you don't want, it's fine. But if you want to tell a real story about romance in the workplace and perhaps lessons learned, and again, I would like to be very inclusive here. Male, female, straight, gay, it doesn't matter. Bisexual, married, an affair where you're married to somebody else, and, you know, all I'm interested in is trying to gain a measure of clarity around romance in the workplace pre-Valentine's Day in this era of hashtag Me Too. So you're either your question or your story or your opinion about what we've said. They're all great reasons to call. We invite you to call here at KALW and work with Marty Nemko and Barbara Nemko. 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. Barbara, what do you think about love contracts? A number of workplaces have had their lawyers create these love contracts, which establish workplace guidelines and rules. And it's a required document in these workplaces. It's signed by two employees that are in a consensual dating relationship. And that may reduce the risk of lawsuits because it's all above board. But if, as I said, let's say they are married to somebody else, they're not so eager to come forward to HR and say, hi, I want to sign this marriage contract. Or even in this progressive era, if somebody's gay, they may not be so eager to come out and say, hi, I'm gay, or transsexual in a transsexual relationship. What are your thoughts about love contracts?
I think when we try to legislate too much, we end up with pushback. And as you obviously pointed out, not everybody's going to come forward. Somebody in a relationship with a boss certainly is not going to want to come forward. The boss isn't going to want to do that. There are a million reasons why people aren't going to come forward with the relationship. So that is absolutely not a panacea. If you want to have a policy, if you limit it pretty much to if you are having a relationship, don't have it with someone you report to or who reports to you. But you can't enforce it. And people are not going to tell you.
I guess my take for what it's worth, and again, you know, again, I'm always a little nervous because I'm self-employed. I'm not in a real-world workplace. So I need to, dear listeners, I need to stipulate to you that I feel like I'm being a little bit theoretical here. But if I were the boss in a workplace where I could make policy, I would certainly allow dating in the workplace because I do think that is the healthiest way. I'm not just here to protect my butt against lawsuits.
I'm sorry. I have to stop you there.
Okay.
Because you say you're going to allow it.
Yes.
You can't stop it.
Right. Fair enough. But, I mean, I'm not going to have... You know, there are some companies that, and organizations that have rules against it completely. So let me start with basics. I would I would not discourage or encourage. But I might, for example, in the sexual harassment workshop that may be required, make sure that people are pretty knowledgeable about what, you know, what pushes the limit. What is yes, what is gray area, and what is no. And I would encourage people to keep their, and again, no, there's no guarantee, but my policy would be, you know, it is professional of you. It'll help your career and as well as the workplace. Keep your relationship private. Try to not, you know, you want to date, but don't go public unless you're about to get married or something. And please try, I don't believe in contracts around this, but, you know, unfortunately, lots of relationships break up. Maybe not every relationship is meant to be a long-term relationship, you know, even at the get-go. Maybe have a conversation with your partner about if it broke up, agree that there would be no retribution, no favoritism. And during the relationship, if you are a boss, really redouble your efforts to give no favoritism to that person. That allows a middle ground for you to date in the workplace, which is a healthy place. I'd want my daughter or my sister or brother to date somebody in the workplace rather than a bar or a rave. But I think with those kind of cautionary notes, and I would probably prohibit. I would prohibit boss and supervisee relationships. There's too much danger there for abuse of power. But that would be the way, the rules that I would set up if I were the boss. Am I out of touch, or are you, because you have a 200-person workplace. What do you think about what I propose as the rules that I would set in my workplace?
I think I would not make them rules because
guidelines. You're right. You're right.
I think I would call them guidelines.
You're right.
Suggestions. The other bad part of it is, if people know you're in a relationship, you could be the best worker in the world.
Right.
If you're in a relationship with someone who supervises you, your promotion is going to be so suspect.
Correct.
So suspect.
Correct.
So you're putting yourself in a professionally difficult situation by being in that relationship. And there is also the possibility that someone else will get the promotion because they're so afraid that they will look like they're doing you a favor because they have a relationship with you.
And you know,
so you may be actually hurting your own chances of advancement.
Of course, that assumes that it would get out. But now, sometimes people are really good at hiding it. But remember, you know, in this day of an age of social media, if you're in a romantic relationship, it can be awful tempting to post that photo of the two lovebirds on your Facebook or your Instagram. And people are going to look at your Facebook and your Instagram, and now everybody in the office knows, even if you were perfect in the workplace. It is fraught. It is fraught. I'll give out the phone number again, then we're going to go right to the phones. If you have a story to tell about romance in the workplace, what your belief in as to what the right policy is, or a question for us, we're not the font of all. There is no absolute wisdom around these kind of issues, but we are not afraid of opining and hopefully be of some value. Those are all good reasons to call Work with Marty Nemco and Barbara Nemco at KALW. The phone number, 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. And now to the phones. Welcome to the show. It is your turn on the air. What's on your mind?
Hi.
Hello.
Is it me?
It is. It is.
Okay. Actually, it's a story.
Great.
And it goes way back to around 1970.
Mm.
And it happened in the business workplace.
Mm-hmm.
And it had to deal with large businesses' data processing. And I was working in operations, and one of our operators got transferred into programming. And there was a very small room, as in a couple of desks, and not much else except wiggle room to get to your chair.
Mm-hmm.
Anyhow, he was in there, now transferred from operations to programming, and a nice young lady was there with him. And, shall we say, chemistry abounded.
Mm-hmm.
And then it came to a crisis point where, unfortunately, there was a design of a new system to be running that would need 25 hours a day on a 24-hour schedule. At any rate, so one day he came charging in at the behest of her because I work swing shift, that she needed some more computer time on her programs. And, you know, once we hit the 4 o'clock hour and go into swing shift, it was production. It wasn't more of the help with development of new programs. At any rate, testosterone took over between he and I, and then, of course, you know, there was actual physical confrontation. I actually carried him out through the double doors and from the computer room. He went back and then came back for seconds because she had the other ear of him. you know, we went for round two, and then it was a case of sitting down with the boss of operations and, you know, kind of sorted out what happened. And it was strange. I mean, it was strange to have the dynamics relative to the Shershayah femme, and, you know, the boys will be boys, or men will be men, or the testosterone overtaking, the female sending her man off to go do her bidding and battle. So anyway, I just thought I'd toss that out there, that Well, those were the days, and supposedly free love. Well, I'm not sure that it's so free.
Mm-hmm.
And I really appreciate your show, and bless you for having the wonderful relationship that you do, and I hope you too have a wonderful Valentine's Day.
Well, thank you very much
for
the call. Barbara, any comment?
Yeah, it was complicated even in the 70s, where there weren't all of these rules and laws and litigation and the Me Too movement. So imagine what the kind of trouble you could be in today.
Yeah. You know, I think today, again, I'm always trying to put myself, if I were single, I think the way in which I would try to meet somebody would take a class, because that met on multiple occasions, because that's out of the workplace, but it is a repeated environment, and it enables me to be with people who shared my views. Maybe it would be a class on whatever I cared about, where I'd be glad to take the class simply for the learning, and you know, the benefits would be that potentially I could meet a romantic partner. Barbara, if you were single, what would you do to meet a guy?
Oh, I suspect in this day and age I'd go online.
Mm. Yeah, I would do that too.
And I don't think the issue is that people go to the workplace looking for the romantic partner. It's that when you're with somebody day in and day out, if there's mm-hmm. chemistry, there's chemistry. It just is.
Yep. I'll give out the phone number again.
That's the problem.
Yep. If you have a story or a question or an opinion about romance in the workplace in the era of hashtag Me Too, we welcome the call in this pre-Valentine's Day show. This is Work with Marty Nemko and Barbara Nemko. The phone number, 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. Back to the phones. It's your turn on the air. What's on your mind?
So you started out with some rules, and it seems
guidelines.
Like... obviously, the person... Now, there's a story going on right now about the Nashville mayor, who's very popular, Megan somebody, who was found to have an affair with her security chief. And that gets more complicated because they're both married.
Mm.
But the story is basically how, well, the citizenry actually accepts it until it comes out that they took expense trips together mm-hmm. on city money mm-hmm. and things like that. So clearly you started out with rules. It would have to be, let's say in a public organization like Barbara's, that the two cannot have any involvement, let's say financial reimbursements,
right.
which is common, or obviously promotions, merit raises,
sure.
or anything mm-hmm. having to do with that, that should cut off. And I have seen where those people are actually tied together financially, even in a public institution, which kind of shocks me.
What do you mean financially tied?
Well, in other words, that one is an approver of expenses over the other.
Oh, I see. So in other words, one could say, hey, let's go to Tahiti together, and the person in charge, their romantic partner, is to approve it. Yes, I think that's a business necessity. Tahiti it is, right?
And you know, even though other departments, let's say the finance department, is looking at things, just that's so sloppy for a boss to be involved in, you know, such an impropriety, even if, let's say, they were all legitimate things.
Yeah. Anyway.
It should be a cutoff. So as a boss setting a policy in a workplace, you should say, look, if you guys have romance, fine, if it's, doesn't interfere with work, but you must sever any ties with, you know, any of that.
Yeah,
we have to know about it. Management should be informed about that.
Yeah. Thanks very much for the call. You know, it is very easy. I think all of us, on public radio, we do have a reputation of being sanctimonious. And human beings are fallible. And it's all well and good. You know, it's like I remember in the old days, the notion was you have to wear a condom unless you're absolutely sure that she's safe. And you know how many people knew that, and yet in the human clinches, did not wear a condom? You know, so I am humbled by the reality that we're all human beings, and all these, you know, it's absurd. How could they do that? And yet, we're human. Some of the most successful people. Look, Monica Lewinsky and Bill Clinton. Bill Clinton, you know, how crazy is that? But we are, that he got involved with her. But we're human. Let's go back to the phone.
But again, yeah, that was a different time. And look at the trouble he got into.
Absolutely. Let's go back to the phones. Welcome to Work with Marty Nemko and Barbara Nemko. What is on your mind?
Hello.
Hi.
Hi. I have a quick workplace story that relates to my. It's about myself, and then a thought about it, and maybe you could give me your opinion.
Great.
So a couple years ago, I was working for a nonprofit. I was a regular general worker, as you would say. I had a brief relationship with someone at the same level that I was at. It was very brief, maybe 2 weeks. But we had had two nights together. Prior, in between the first and the second night, she was sexting me, if you will, where she's, taking pictures of herself and sexual things and sending it. So I was like, oh, wow, okay, we're going to go there. Second night, we hooked up. And I was very interested in her, and I was making advances, and we're working in the same workplace. She was not responding to that all of a sudden, and I had a hard time dealing with that at work and controlling my feelings. I remember locking my office door at one point, and I was upset, or walking outside, going into a single-person bathroom. Okay, that ended. Then I ended up about a year later hooking up with an intern. Now, I did not supervise the interns, but we did work with them a little bit, and they were only there for I think 3 months. Okay, that ended. After that, I had a relationship which lasted a while with a woman. Did not work for my agency, but her agency did work inside of our building and worked with our agency. Basically, she worked for a management company that managed the building within which my agency worked with the people that resided there. We had a long relationship. It was very passionate, very intense, and she decided to end it, and I was very distraught over that. They found out about it. The management had found out about it, and they moved her to another building. About a week later, I was called into human resources, and they had questioned me about it, and they had said that she made an allegation that somebody had taken a key to her car, taken a key and, rubbed it down the car to make, to damage the car. And I was asked about this, and I didn't do it. I'm gonna be honest with you, I would tell you if I did. And I was completely surprised, and I then. Yeah, why would you accuse me of something so childish? No, I mean, yes, I was upset. Yes, I was disrupted. I'm not going to key someone's car. And so I was asked about that. Then when I was leaving the human resources office, they said, hey, you, can you not hook up with people in the agency or with people that we do business with? Because we know about this woman and we know about this woman with you. And I couldn't believe that they knew about the other two, but they did know about it. And I was given a fair warning. Now, here's my thought. I spend more time with the people I work with than I do with my significant other. I'm with them 40 hours a week, and we're doing a lot of work, especially when you're in the human services industry. It's emotional work. A lot of times you're presented with things that hurt you, which depress you, which a lot of people can't handle. Working in the social services industry in San Francisco. And so you relate with other people on a very emotional level where you have to express your feelings. You're not a robot, And so you get close with people. And on top of it, you're spending more time with these people or with one person specifically, sometimes than you are with your, significant other.
Exactly.
At home.
And so
how can you stop human behavior in this sense? I mean, it's natural that that's going to happen, and it's going to lead to things. I don't understand. You guys, a lot of people are like, you're going to fight, you're fighting human nature. You're fighting, and I agree with that. You are fighting human nature and the inevitable. You put two people in a position like that for 40 hours a week where you're dealing with emotional situations, where you need an outlet to speak. Yeah, they're going to get close. Yeah. They're going to comfort one another, and one thing's going to lead to another. Duh.
Okay, thank you very much for the call. Human beings at their core, uncivilized, are animals. And the purpose of civilization and the wise government, wise laws, is striking the balance between allowing human fallibility, but not, we can't just do anything we want, or we really, there will be no workplaces, there will be no society. Barbara, you have any comment about about the previous caller's experience?
Well, the other side of that, though, is studies have shown that couples dating in the workplace can be more productive because they love coming to work.
Mm.
They love getting together and talking about problems. They'll work overtime. And it's too bad that this era of litigation has made the whole situation so fraught that you really can't do that. Although, if you can keep it on a platonic level, we're not, you said before that we're animals, and I kind of resent that because...
Well, we are, by definition, we are animals.
Well, we are, but we have minds.
Of course, exactly. We're trying to be civilized.
We can control ourselves.
To some extent,
so
yes.
You can have chemistry. You can have a flirtation. That doesn't mean you have to act on it and enter into a sexual relationship. And people who are enjoying that kind of relationship at work have the best of all worlds. They're not sleeping together. They're enjoying each other's company. They look forward to going to work. They look forward to working together. And there's less likelihood of them getting into a fight because they're not actually physically involved.
We got all these lines lighted up, so I'm really curious to hear what
it's
people
a hot
have to
topic.
Say. Yeah, right. literally.
Literally.
Yeah, that's right. Okay, welcome to Work with Marty and Barbara. What's on your mind?
Hello.
Hi.
Hi.
Hi. I just wanted to convey a story of the 80s, the early 80s, whereby I was massage therapist and gym manager on a ship around the Hawaiians. I was in love with the job, but it was the solarium that I worked in was at the captain's bridge, and the captain early on came on to me, and I had strict orders from the hotel manager not to have any romantic ideas about the captain. And the captain was ordering me to come to his cabin, and my dad had just died, and this captain had a father figure kind of air about him.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was hard to resist the situation after a while. And I was glad when I finally left the job. Because it was just too confusing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, Barbara, anyway, thank you very much. Barbara, you had told me, I don't remember the story, there was something about somebody who, you know, came to their boss's house at 2 in the morning or something like that. What was that story? I don't remember at all what it is anymore. Do you know? Do you?
No.
Okay. I remember there was...
But I think this notion of... it was hard to resist, and that's okay. And they didn't break up, and she didn't sue him, and he didn't force her. And there are so many nuances to these kinds of relationships.
You know, is it always, you know, we're in the era of Me Too, 100% of the responsibility is generally the blame, not the responsibility, the blame is on the man. What kind of a role, as I you know, does a woman have in when she goes to somebody, who was it? Anita Hill went to Clarence Thomas's apartment at 2 in the morning or something. Is this right? And or this Aziz, you know, whatever. You know, is all of the blame? Does all of the responsibility to be restrained? Is it all fall on the man?
Oh, absolutely not. Absolutely not. I think it should be a two-way street. Takes two.
Let's go to the phones. Let's take one more call, I think, and then we probably cover this topic as well as I think we need to. So welcome to Work with Marty Nemko and Barbara Nemko. What's on your mind?
Hey.
Hi.
So I just wanted to call in because I'm currently in a relationship with someone that I work with.
Uh-huh.
And there was a period of tension where it was kind of awkward and not quite sure what to do about letting people know or keeping it a secret, so on and so forth. But speaking to what Barbara had said earlier, it's actually a great supportive environment mm-hmm. for work, because I mm-hmm. can't even tell you how many times I've, you know, needed to work late to finish something or needed to get in early, and we do it together.
Right. It's exciting. It's motivating.
It's a very supportive, great environment. And maybe I'm just fortunate, but it's actually worked out fantastically.
I love to hear that. You know, and again, Barbara and I we're married now. Before we're married and while we're married, we have worked together on projects, and it works out much better because, you know, we do love each other, and it's more fun to work with Barbara than with most strangers. So I'm really glad. I think that's an excellent way to kind of capstone this segment on the show. So I thank you. But I do need to say my board operator, Joanne Marr, did write a little note that she wanted me to mention, and it's a good point, that nepotism is a risk. So, you know, hiring a relative of the person the boss is involved with. There's so many conflicts of interest that accrue. So, certainly we're human, and there really is, as with most issues, there's both sides. It's a great place to meet somebody. It can be motivating and exciting, but it's fraught, especially when there is a boss-supervisee relationship. Barbara, I'd like you to get the last word, though. What would you like to say to capstone this segment?
Be careful out there. It's dangerous.
Yeah. Okay. Barbara, I think I'm going to let you go.
Okay.
And obviously, I will see you
at
Bertolucci's, and off to D.C. we go.
Okay.
All right. Love you. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Yeah. You know, I guess I've watched too many movies, TV shows, where the dad missed their children's concert or recital or whatever. And so my granddaughter is in her first play. She's in Cinderella, and they live in D.C., and so Barbara and I are going to take the red eye tonight and see her. But so that's what that was about. I'll see you soon, and et cetera. But that's more than you want to know, perhaps. But now I want to turn to what is the core function of the show, doing workovers. So if you or someone you care about has got a work-related problem, it could, of course, be related to romance in the workplace, but it certainly could be because you're unemployed, underemployed, unhappy with your boss, unhappy with a supervisee, not sure what the meaning of life is, even if you're relatively successful. You're over 40 or over 50 and are nervous about finding work in the second half of your life. Any kind of work, or self-employed. You know, I do like playing Shark Tank on this show, so that if you have a business idea you want to run by me, or you're already running a business and want to get my take on whether I think it's a good idea or maybe some suggestions on how to improve it, those are all fair game reasons to call. I call them workovers with no pummeling involved. The price is certainly right. Zero, zippo, nada. The phone number here at Work with Marty Nemco, 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. I have been remiss. I was kind of reflecting on the past few months of shows. I haven't talked at all about self-employment. And I like to present ideas that are perhaps contrary to conventional wisdom. There is the conventional wisdom today is that all businesses need to market. And you need to market, market, market. Even if you're a really excellent professional, it's about networking, it's about marketing. But when I step back and think about the successful practitioners that I know, whether they be psychologists or career counselors or doctors or lawyers or whatever, they do very little marketing. They are willing to trust that word of mouth is going to do the job for them, and they get more credibility. Think about it. If you saw a doctor or dentist that advertised, you know, ace credit dentist, aren't you more likely to view askance if they were really that good, would they need to pay for an advertisement? So if you can afford it, I understand if you desperately need money now, you may need to make a little bit of an investment in ads or whatever. But my normal recommendation for one and small person businesses is to simply, the only marketing you should probably do would be at the end of a session or at the end of doing some work, say, it was a pleasure working for you. If you might know somebody else who might use my services, I'd welcome that. Or perhaps an email, a regular, say, monthly or quarterly email with some practical tips or whatever to your existing clients. I think that in the end, short term, you may make less money, but long term, I think your reputation will be better, and you won't be subject to the temptations of marketing, where there is a tendency to be a little hypey about who you are. I mean, I love theater, but every time I'm on these various mailing lists for everything from ACT to Berkeley Rep and smaller theaters, and everything you always see is, it's a hit, it's fantastic, it's a, you know, it's, and you feel like it's almost like they're trying too hard. My feelings about the theater company are worse because of all that hype, because not every play they do is a blockbuster. So see if you can pull on some ropes of restraint and limit your marketing. And it's not just me who's saying this, and part of the preparation for my doing this little segment on the show is I learned about a guy whose name is Claude Shannon. He's probably the most important genius you've never heard of. He's a guy whose intellect was on par with Albert Einstein and Isaac Newton. He was a cryptographer. He was, the father of information science. He is a true genius, and of course, he was exceptional, so he didn't really need to do much marketing, but he concurred with what I just said. There was the book written by Rob Goodman and Jimmy Soney called The Mind at Play about this guy, Claude Shannon. And they say that Claude Shannon said, the less marketing you need, the better your idea or product probably is. Shannon did not aggressively market his ideas. He would have found it gauche to do so. But of course, he also didn't have to because his ideas were so striking and original, they caught fire on their own. What does that mean for the rest of us? Don't we all believe our work is striking and original, or at least good? And look, maybe our ideas are just that, just good. But flogging our ideas or ourselves past the point at which we should know better just isn't right. Sometimes it just isn't there. And it's time to not oversell. Just a thought. All right, phone number here, Work with Marty Nemko. If you would like a workover, you got a work-related problem of any sort, I can usually help you. The phone number here is 415-841-4134. That's the number here at KALW, where for free, this is my pro bono work. I'm always happy to help you out. The phone number, 415-841-4134. And now, to the phones. Welcome to the show. It is your turn on the air. How can I help you? Hi. Are you there? Hello?
Oh, hi.
Hi.
My name is Quinn.
Hello, Quinn.
I'm technically self-employed. I'm actually just a delivery driver, and I've got a couple of freelance gigs. And I'm sort of struggling right now with a sort of existential crisis. I think you mentioned something like that.
Yep.
Which is that basically I don't want to work the number of hours that I have to work to live in the city that I love. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. I'm basically, because I lost one of my main jobs recently, and I had about a month of working part-time, and I suddenly had this richness in my life, all of these other interests, and I could do the things that I was passionate about, like art. And but now I'm back to working full-time, and everything seems a bit darker and more depressing because I'm back to doing that kind of nowhere job.
So a couple of thoughts. There are three options you have. One is to find a more lucrative, better job. Two is to cut your housing costs, which is the most, you know, the biggest expense. Or three, because there's always, you know, 90% of people pay that obscene San Francisco rent, but there's always 10% who have way below market rent. Or decide that while you love the city, you love your art and your avocational activities more, so you move to places that have some of what San Francisco offers, like Madison, Wisconsin, or Austin, Texas, or Raleigh, North Carolina. You know, there are places that are much lower cost that are any university town, like Bozeman, Montana. Which of those options feel right for you, Quinn?
Well, I do have a pretty good deal on my rent right now. It's pretty way below market, and I guess option number one would be ideal. I just haven't successfully been able to increase my income any. I don't know. It just hasn't.
Okay. Well, that's my job here to help you with that. Well, that's where I need you to tell me. I know you like art. I know nobody really wants to make delivery man like your career for your life. Tell me some clues about who you are that might help me help you come up with a career that is more lucrative and yet doesn't feel like you're selling your soul.
well, honestly, that's a tricky kind of question because when I did briefly work as a freelance artist, but it was I guess attaching money to the process of creating art sort of kind of ruined it for me.
And it also is very unrealistic for 99%. You know, there, I remember reading a study that 92% of people who call themselves professional artists earn less than $1,000 a year from their art, and they never even pay back their student loans from all that art school. So let's forget about art for a moment. Let's agree that art is wonderful. Like I said, I love music, I love theater, but it's not usually, unless you're really talented or lucky or well-connected, it's usually not going to be your income source. But tell me some other things. What natural gifts do you have or knowledge or experience do you have that we could parlay into a better job than delivery driver?
Mm-hmm. Well, I have a natural desire to help people mm-hmm. and provide some value to people, and I just have a naturally compassionate sort of personality. I'm not sure if that's incredibly lucrative.
Well, let's just start with that. You know, not saying getting rich, but let's play just a little game. I'm going to mention two helping professions, and you tell me which of the two your intuition tells you would be a wiser choice for you. And then we'll just keep doing this till we narrow down. Would you rather be a social worker or a teacher?
I think I would like some parts of either. I don't know.
We're close already. So, okay. how much school do you have? How much formal education do you have?
I have a bachelor in fine arts.
Okay. And so it would be easier perhaps to leverage to become let's say, would you rather be a teacher or would you rather become a really ethical sales manager at an art supply store?
That's an interesting role, an ethical sales manager. I mean, I guess that one.
Okay.
Yeah.
Would you rather be the ethical sales manager in an art supply store, or would you rather become a muralist to beautify the not-so-beautiful parts of San Francisco?
Oh, muralist. Definitely.
Okay. Would you rather try to do that self-employed or join? There are small, little, few-person entities that have connections in with government and with funding sources. Would you rather try to do it self-employed or join a mural organization? Small.
I would do better in an organization.
Okay.
Support of other people. Yeah.
Okay. Is there any other kind of, you know, because the government is a relatively good payer. Would you rather do mural work for the government, or is there any other kind of artistic work that feels lucrative, not just splattering paint on a canvas, but something that could theoretically be lucrative? Can you envision any kind of art that is more lucrative, that would be more exciting to you than being a muralist?
Maybe... I see a lot of like reclaimed sort of art installations on the streets, and I don't know.
There's no money in that.
Lucrative that is. Yeah,
no, it's not. There's no money in that. So for today and for the purpose of this conversation, I want my clients and you, and in this case my caller, to come away with a baby step. Since you were pretty excited about the idea of being a muralist, what if I simply asked you to Google San Francisco muralists? And then either email or phone somebody who does that and say, you know, right now I'm a delivery driver. It's soulless for me. It's depressing. I'm an artist at my core. Do you have any advice for me about how I might be able to make a decent living in the world of murals? Could you see doing that?
Yeah, that sounds like a really good idea.
Okay, well yeah. Then I'm glad you called Work with Marty Nemko.
Thank you so much.
You take care.
Thanks, you too.
Bye. I'll give out the phone number one more time. If you have a work-related problem of any sort, and again, whether you're unemployed or very well-employed and still unhappy, all I care about is you have a work-related problem. I can usually be helpful, and I love being helpful. So, like this caller, I love being helpful. Phone number here, Work with Marty Nemko, 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. Back to the phones. It's your turn on the air. How can I help you?
Hi. Marty, thank you. Right now, I'm on SSDI, and I work minimally. And
by the way, for those people who don't know,
minimally, I'm talking like $2,000 a year.
Got it. I just want our listeners to know, SSDI is Social Security Disability Insurance. Go ahead.
Yes.
Okay.
And I have a new health problem, which is it's cardiac.
Okay.
And it's affecting, you know, what skills I can use, including lifting.
Right.
And I mean, ideally, I'd like to have a couple of months off. I'd either like to be working part-time and earning the income from that, or doing getting SSI, which would cover the expenses. My expenses are not much, but if you don't have it.
Sure.
The challenge is right now, because of the limitations and because of my software deficiencies, stuff that I'd like to do, something like development assistant, the opportunities are few. You know, there are a lot of ways that I can use my broad level of skills in different ways, but there aren't that many opportunities. So I am pursuing, you know, just checking out the SSI thing, you know, and
let me interrupt you for interest of time. So a development assistant, is there different kinds of development assistant? Are you talking about a fundraiser, somebody who's helping with the fundraising efforts in a nonprofit?
Yeah.
Okay. And obviously that doesn't involve lifting. And while there may be relatively few jobs, do you have a, you know, given that you have a cardiac issue, are you interested in being involved in the Heart Association? Are there other causes that are deep to your soul or where you have a networking connection in, somebody who's a friend or relative who's doing that? Where you don't need lots of jobs, you just need one, and it's only part-time. It's not like you're looking to make $1 million here.
Yeah.
And you know, there are needs for relatively low-paid assistance, and that would probably keep you even under the SSI limits. What kind of a nonprofit or individual-specific nonprofit would you like to consider reaching out to?
Well, I mean, I have background in peace justice. I have a significant background in peace justice, workforce development, as well as a lot of general activist environmental. So, you know, I am pursuing some of these. The challenge is that my software background, in terms of what am I?
Razor's Edge, for example.
What?
Razor's Edge. That's the software that develops.
Razor's Edge. I don't have that. I don't have. Okay, I don't have Salesforce.
All right. So I'm going to interrupt you again. So what if I said, while you're at this point in that period where you can take a little time off, that you take a short course on the basics of Razor's Edge. Salesforce is more complicated, but Razor's Edge is a widely used nonprofit fundraising software. So at least you'll know enough. You're not supposed to run the thing. You're just going to have some basic skills. And then make a list of one or two peace and justice organizations or one or two workforce development organizations and one or two environmental organizations. Not the big fancy ones, because they're not going to hire you, but smaller ones. And then reach out. Either, yes, certainly answer ads. For an entry-level job, you can just answer an ad and sometimes you'll get hired. But I would do both answering ads as well as perhaps phoning or emailing the development director, if there is one, for a small nonprofit in those spaces. And, you know, that's your best shot. Rather than saying you'd love to be a development assistant but not do anything, that kind of a laser-focused approach might well lend you a job. And part-time is exactly what many nonprofits want. they don't want to spend on a full-time person. So that's my best advice for today.
Okay, thanks a lot.
You're welcome. We have time for one more call, briefly. Let's go back to the phones. Welcome to Work with Marty Nemko. What's on your mind?
Hey, Marty.
Hi.
Hi. I have a question. I am the founder of a nonprofit.
Mm-hmm.
We're in our fifth year, mm-hmm. and sort of moving into sustainability mode in all good ways. I'm having a big personal change in my life that is really requiring me to make more money. And I had been surviving just fine on a very meager, not really a living wage in San Francisco, and certainly not a wage for a executive director of a nonprofit.
Mm-hmm.
And I just feel very much in a bind, as I am the one who works with the budgets and sort of knows that there's no money, no extra money to give me.
Yep.
But also in a bind of, well, even if I leave to pursue another job that will give me the money, nobody in their right mind is going to take this job for the money it's offering.
Okay, so normally what happens here is one of two things. You either merge with another nonprofit that shares your vision and therefore could pay you more, or you or somebody writes a grant proposal to a foundation or to a government agency that enables you to get paid reasonably. Are either of those realistic for you?
No. It's a school. So merging a school, there's nothing really to merge with.
Schools merge all the time. Oh, private schools merge all the time.
Do they?
Of course. Absolutely. I remember, you know, near where I live, there's a school called Head Royce, and it used to be called Anna Head School, and then somebody Royce, and it became Head Royce. You know,
right.
Lots of schools merge all the time. So, you know, then you have synergies of expenses, because the expense of running a school is pretty crazy. So
yeah.
What if I said for today, because we are out of time, if I said, meditate upon a school that shares your mission, and see if there might be some synergies either working for them or merging or some kind of a collaboration. That's my best shot for today.
We'll take it.
All right. Okay, you take care. Thanks a lot for calling Work with Marty Nemko. Anyway, I really appreciate all of you for calling in. And I do, you know, Valentine's Day has become this commercial. I hate it. It's all about, you know, fancy candies and fancy flowers that are very often bought for obligatory reasons rather than real ones. But even in the era of Me Too and even in the workplace, it doesn't mean romance is dead, but it should be more heartfelt than a $3 or $4 Hallmark card or, you know, roses where they quadruple the price for the 4 days before before Valentine's Day. So show your love in a more human way, something that's made, something that's said, something you write, a poem, whatever. And that can be platonic love with people in your workplace as well. Anyway, that is Work with Marty Nemko for this week. I want to thank my board operator, Joanne Marr, and of course, all of you for listening and calling in. Please join me again next Thursday at 7 p.m., of course. You can call in for a workover. Plus, I'll share some careers that are well-suited for career changers, some under-the-radar careers for people who like to work with their hands, and under-the-radar careers for some science, math, and tech types. Until then, this is Marty Nemko reminding you that we find comfort among those who agree with us, growth among those who don't.